Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Joining us today is retired United States Navy Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, the executive director of the Cyberspace Solarium Commission, that earlier this year issued more than 80 recommendations to improve the nation's overall cybersecurity. Panel was chaired by Maine Independent Senator Angus King and Wisconsin Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher. Mark, thanks very much for joining us.
Vago, it's a pleasure to be here again.
Absolutely. I had a great conversation with you and Eric Sayers just last week, and I appreciate you coming on twice in 1 week. The Solarium Commission crafted its recommendations in a way to allow very rapid adoption by Congress, right? You had members of Congress who were involved in it. Jim Langevin was also involved in it, and obviously one of the people key to crafting legislation. The Defense Department, Homeland Security, a number of other agencies, Chris Wray, the FBI director, were represented as commissioners as well. And yet we are on an impasse on several key elements of legislation, among them the administration's opposition to creating rapidly a national cyber director that answers to the president in order to be able to oversee this critical area. Where are we on the adoption of legislation, and where are we going to be at the end of this legislative session, especially now that it looks like the NDAA is kind of falling apart and we may have to be resorting to continuing resolutions? You know, where are we as somebody who's been working this intimately?
So first, you're absolutely correct in how you describe the Solarium's intent. You know, when Senator Sass brought this to Senator McCain to put in the FY19 NDAA, they both agreed that you need to have a bias for action. And that's clear in how we are composed. We have four serving legislators, Senator King, who's a co-chairman, Senator Ben Sass from Nebraska, Representative Gallagher, who's a co-chairman, and you mentioned, and Representative Jim Langevin from Rhode Island, who is also the chair of the subcommittee on intelligence and emerging threats in the House. So we have four active legislators. You're right, we had four executive branch leaders as well, Deputy Secretary of Defense Norquist, FBI Director Wray, also the Deputy Homeland Security and Deputy Director of National Intelligence. So a good mix there along with our six civilian experts. But those four legislators made you biased for action. How does that play out? Well, most commissions, there's people who actually study commissions, there's a field in it, there's books published in it. And when you read about it, federal commissions tend to get ones that are not based on a crisis, like say the 9/11 commission, but based on trying to deal with a longstanding challenging policy issue like this, they tend to get about 13% of their recommendations, or 13 to 15% of the recommendations taken care of either through executive action or legislation. You know, we're going to get well past that because we had 82 recommendations, 30 of them were not legislation. And, you know, those are things handled either by executive action or by actions out in the private sector. And some percentage of those are already being tackled. And we'll do a report card on that in the next 3 or 4 months to show that progress. But then 52 of them were legislative proposals. Not all of them are made for the NDAA. Some of them were freestanding bills or acts that really were outside the scope of what you normally put inside the NDAA, even in the loosest interpretation. But then a large number of them, we prepped about 35 of the 52 for legislative action in the NDAA. In the end, I think all 35 of those got a hearing in both the House and the Senate with the relative staffs, you know, with the relevant committee staffs, in terms of they took a look at them. And right now we have 29 in various states in the House and Senate versions of the NDAA. We have 11 that are in both versions of the House and Senate. We have 12 that are only in the House version. We have 6 that are only in the Senate version. Now, look, we can end up with 0 of these in the final version. That is, you know, one of the options. And I guess we could end up with 29, although I think those are equally unlikely. I'm hoping, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20 of these. And these are some of the meatier ones. These are some of the ones about, there's 8 or 9 of them that are about making the Department of Defense more effective in both its offensive and defensive cyber operations. That would include a force structure assessment of the cyber mission force, for example. Something about updating the current force structure assessment, which was based on a 2012 assessment of Russia and China and a 2013 look at our own activities. And it drove a force structure of around 6,200 on that operator, or 6,200 personnel at the cyber mission force. you know, the based on where China and Russia have grown since 2012 and our own expansion, you know, development of persistent engagement and defend forward tactics and operational concepts, you would expect that the force structure assessment in 2021 will be somewhat higher than the one that was reached in 2013. And I think that'll have a big impact. There are also ones that are not DoD specific that I think, you know, we'll be working hard to get the idea of the continuity of the economy, the idea of planning for the recovery, the resilience response to an incident, recovery of our economy, much like we plan for COOP and the continuity of the president, the continuity of operations of the government. We need to be doing the same thing for our economy. And I think that bill, which is only in the Senate version right now, I think is an important one to get through into the final product. And then you mentioned National Cyber Directory. That's one that's fully vested in the House version. In the Senate version, there's a placeholder, but we held hearings with both the House and the Senate over the last 3 weeks, including with the Senate earlier this week. Chairman Rounds and Ranking Member Manchin of the Senate Committee on Cybersecurity held a hearing on the National Cyber Directory issue and other issues from the Cyberspace Layering Commission report and took a look at it. We'll see where we end up in the Senate version and we'll see where we end up overall. There's certainly no guarantees on anything in a National Defense Authorization Act, but we're hoping to get between 15 and 20 of the recommendations we had in this in our initial proposals and some of the more significant ones, like I just mentioned. I just mentioned three of probably seven or eight of those 15 to 20 that I would consider significant alterations. And this is, you know, round one. There are other legislative vehicles we'll be using over the next 6 months. And then there's another National Defense Authorization cycle in fiscal year 20 for the FY22 NDAA. So I'm very fairly comfortable that we are making a good first step, but I have no idea what the scale and scope of our the final product will look like this year.
What is the nature of the administration's pushback on the National Cyber Director job? We talked about it with Chris Inglis a little bit, another one of the commissioners earlier this summer. What's the opposition to it? Because I think as Chairman King said, you know, if you don't have one throat to choke, that's, you know, you're just complicating the entire system.
I think look, be careful. I don't speak for the administration on this. I have certainly heard the arguments, and I think they congeal around a couple issues. One, in general, the Senate and the Congress shouldn't tell the White House how to organize itself. Now, look, there's obvious exceptions to that in terms of, you know, statutorily established cabinet members, more than dozen members inside the executive office of the president who are in fact already Senate confirmed, you know, almost five or six personnel in the Office of Management Budget, multiple personnel in U.S. Trade Representative, Office of National Drug Control Policy, and Office of Science and Technology Policy. So I kind of think that argument's well worn, and it's been used by lots of administrations before they turn around and accept and then nominate somebody into the job. So I'm a little less concerned about that one. The other one is kind of this broad argument that these things are best handled by the National Security Advisor. Certainly that was John Bolton's position when he kneecapped the Homeland Security Advisor and then removed the cyber coordinator in his first few months in the office and moved it down to being a senior director position inside the NSC. Look, the NSC plays an incredibly important role in cyber. And the current team there does a great job on the offensive side. And I think, you know, when you combine what we did in FY19 NDAA, the establishment of cyber surveillance and reconnaissance into traditional military activity, and you combine it with NSPM 13 that the administration put out, we now have a much more effective and usable capability and capacity to execute offensive cyber operations. And I think the response to the 2018 election malfeasance by the Russians, a much more effective response by this administration than was done in 2016, is reflective of that. But look, that's about the offensive side. And when we're arguing for the National Cyber Director, we're arguing for someone whose primary responsibility is about the planning for, preparations for, initial response to, and then long-term recovery from a national a cybersecurity attack on our national critical infrastructure, really the defensive side of the thing. There'll still be offensive operations. And the National Security Advisor should run that, and it should go through the traditional national command authority for Title 10 operations, and then that in the finding system we have for Title 50 operations. And this person should, the National Cyber Director should be aware of that. He should certainly be someone who contributes to the general thinking about it, but he is not at all responsible for it, and he doesn't coordinate it or lead it or assess it. His job, his or her job as a National Cyber Director would be to make sure we're integrating properly the national cyber strategy and the implementation of an effective defense of our national critical infrastructure, and to be coordinated with the execution of the offensive of any Title 10 or Title 50 operations, not leading or actually coordinating him or herself. So I think that argument is an argument about the strength and power of the National Security Advisor. The final thing I say about this is cyber is this whole new mission area, much like pandemic is now, although both were known, neither was properly prepared for over several decades in the case of cyber. The idea that you have these new things come out and we'll just handle them in the existing overburdened constructs, that no one has ever accused the National Security Advisor of any administration of having a lot of free time in his day. And so the idea that the National Security Advisor is waking up in the morning and cyber is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up to about 20 priority is unrealistic. When the National Cyber Director wakes up in the morning, it'll be her number one priority. And so from our point of view, that's how we need to handle cyber, and that's why a National Cyber Director is required.
And I wholeheartedly agree with that assessment. Two more questions. President Trump has signed executive orders an executive order on TikTok and WeChat. Both companies have 45 days to either get sold to an American company or get out of the U.S. market. Why do these Chinese, popular Chinese apps, Mark, constitute a national security threat that needs to be ejected from the U.S. market?
So the first thing I'd say is the Cyberspace Layering Commission didn't look specifically at either of these two applications. We stepped back one, we brought ourselves back one step and said, and looked at the strategic viewpoint and said, we actually need a national strategy or an industrial strategy for how we ensure that we have a safe and secure supply chain. And I'm not talking about where I buy my sneakers. I'm talking about where I buy microchips for Jazz and ERs. So broadly, we stepped back and said, look, we need the executive branch needs to have a strategy. So we have a recommendation from the Congress asking the executive branch to produce that sort of strategy, that strategy that lays out how do we create a safe and secure supply chain, what extra authorities are needed, what kind of appropriations are going to be needed because this won't be free, and what to do. In the absence of that strategy, you're now seeing a whole bunch of probably appropriate but completely uncoordinated lines of effort. And I'd include in these congressional legislation, there are three great bills out there right now. I think all of them are different variations of the NDAA. One's the American Foundries Act. The other is the CHIPS Act, for producing semiconductors in America. And the third is utilizing our Strategic Allied Telecommunications Act, or the USA Telecommunications Act, about how we develop RAN and specifically O-RAN in the 5G networks. So these are great, operational concepts, so to speak. These TikTok and WeChat decisions are even more tactical. So our big concern in the commission is that we're doing these tactical and operational things without a strategic kind of umbrella to kind of guide right. What we're doing and put everything in perspective. On the specifics of this, I worry more about WeChat just because it's about monitoring the communications and probably will heavily impact the communications of the Chinese diaspora in the United States as they go back to their families in China. And I think that's unsafe, and there's probably some national security implications in that. There's certainly some human rights implications in that. And so I think that we have to be sensitive to the fact that the corporations that are headquartered in China that are subject to the Chinese intelligence acts that require the companies to provide support and data to the Chinese Communist Party and its intelligence and military arms, it should concern us. Again, I'm a little less, I have a teenage daughter. I'm slightly less worried about what I see on TikTok than what I can imagine can happen on WeChat. But again, these are tactical elements of what should be a strategic, a clearly articulated, unclassified, nationally understood strategic approach to how we deal to a safe and secure supply chain and environment with China.
Let me ask you one last question, and that's about the National Security Agency's guidance to the national security community not to use location services. I know that sounds horribly intuitive, Mark, but what's there to be said about this? Because there are some folks who would have regarded this as sort of intuitive and something we should have perhaps been doing a long time ago. But bring us up to speed on the decision and what does it mean?
So, this is the commission, again, didn't deal with this, but I'll say from my point of view, I think this is obviously the right guidance. It existed in some forms or another in more limited scope, you know, for certain people and aspects and systems. But this broad guidance is the appropriate thing to do. It is intuitive. It is appropriate. And it should be executed, aggressively and comprehensively across the national security community. We understand what the vulnerabilities are in many of the systems that underlie this, and you can, depending on the person's roles or responsibilities, you can begin to understand what the risk is, and not having these simple technical steps executed. So fully support it, understand it. But I don't think it should sound like this is out of the blue. There are elements of this that have been in place for certain people and certain responsibilities and certain systems for years.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Vago. It was a pleasure to be here.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.